Welcome to the No-Till Farmer Podcast, brought to you by the Ultramate lineup by the Andersons. I'm Michaela Pogner, Managing Editor at No-Till Farmer. In today's episode of the podcast, no-tillers from around the U.S. discuss their outlook on autonomy in agriculture and the most valuable precision technologies in use on their farms. Let's get started with a conversation with Executive Editor Kim Schmidt, Bucyrus, Kansas no-tiller Nick Getterman, and Ohio State University Ag Engineer John Fulton. You'll hear them speak in that order.
I guess one thing I was going to ask that we didn't get to in there was kind of where you put yourself on the adoption curve for some of this technology advancement when it comes to autonomy and some of the more kind of robotic type applications that are starting to emerge. Where do you see that on your own operation?
I would think the first thing we would look at when you think of autonomy is something like a drone might have the most, be the first thing we would adopt. There, I think for us, they're limited from one aspect, from fungicide applications. They don't have, my opinion, for our farm, enough water to carry the fungicide or insecticide into the canopy, like a ground rig that we currently use does, where we're using 20 gallon of water to penetrate the canopy, especially non-GMO corn, to get insecticide down on the silk. And then I see them limited as far as applying cover crops on carrying capacity. Not that they couldn't get better and improve, but that I think that'd be the first thing we'd adopt, more so over than maybe an autonomous tractor or something like that, because of our field shape and size is so odd. We have a lot of small and irregular shaped fields, that a lot of terraces that we don't do tillage, so that would be the first thing I'd put an autonomous tractor on doing. Autonomous tractor on a planter or drill is maybe a drill drilling wheat or beans potentially. I'm not ready to put it on a corn planter.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
Too much that could go wrong.
Well, that is the important pass, right? That kind of sets the ground for the rest of the season. It's just too important, I think. Can't mess it up.
I've seen pictures, I haven't seen one in person, of a smaller self-propelled battery-powered autonomous planter. Is it battery-powered or has it got an engine on it?
There's a couple of different ones.
Yeah, like a 4-row. That's got my eye more so, not trying to put autonomy on the current machine, but maybe making a machine around autonomy. Lighter weight, I think, compaction is probably near and dear to me. Just having heavy things out on the field is hard on the soil. So I'm a soil health person. If we could get out there a little earlier with a lighter weight autonomous machine, I think that there's something to that. I think and maybe it could be potentially cheaper than a lot of iron. Obviously you have to have a lot more of them, but if they don't have a big heavy or don't have a motor and fuel tank and all that, then you could, maybe that could save on some costs to allow for more machines.
What are you guys seeing in just the research you're doing and testing and things like that?
Well, to add on to Nick, we've got a lot of growers, they're not doing thousands of acres of like cover crops, but 40 to two, maybe 400 acres, and they need a tool that delivers cover crops the latter part of the season, gets them seeded in the time frame that we need to get growth prior to, especially frost these days. That drones have become an option for them to use to get cover crops out, where they didn't really have a tool. They would have to get with someone commercially that either was a plane or a high clearance machine, and that just wasn't working. We just didn't have the custom application opportunities for those growers, and this has all of a sudden become an option, which I think is great. Again, it's maybe not for someone like what Nick's operating, but I do think what I suggest, if we came back to Nick in 4 or 5 years, he'll probably say, well, we figured out how drones have complemented our other pieces, especially if I got a regular shaped fields, could a drone do some things in those fields more efficiently than a ground machine can do? And I think there'll be gains there, but we got to get to the point where they're robust enough, and we're getting there, and you have confidence that it can perform in that manner and complement the suite of machines that you're running out there. The other thing I think I would add on the autonomy side is, you know, Nick alluded to it. I mean, when you're in the harvest operation, it's a busy time of year. It's logistics, in my opinion, because I've got harvesters, I've got grain carts, I got semis or wagons running, and there is typically growers will have another operation that they want to complete during that period, whether it's sowing wheat, whether it's maybe tillage. But I know a lot of our growers, or some of our growers in the state of Ohio, because of labor challenges and just not having enough people, I can't do all that concurrently and sustain it. And so I do think whether we got OEMs coming to market here pretty quick, that there will be some options, and in certain conditions, it may not be those small fields, but conditions where a Thomas tractor can be performing an operation while the harvest operation is where you get your manpower. And so our growers, it's dependent. They talk about sowing wheat. They talk about having a Thomas tractor to do some tillage while they're harvesting. And then the other thing that they see is potentially automating a grain cart, if they can build that in and bring efficiencies if it doesn't slow things up. But those are some real decisions. I think the big thing that the growers that I get concerned about is, do they have the tractors that are, we talked back in the day, was your tractor guidance ready? Remember those days? Mm-hmm. Now that's not a thing, but is your tractor autonomous ready?
You bet.
And so all of a sudden, do you have the machine that can, if an OEM or a third party can turn it on, do you have the wiring harness and the components there without a huge investment to make it work? And so that's what we've been trying to educate our growers on, is as you think forward, if you're thinking that you might jump to that in the next 3 years, as you trade even for older model tractors, is that model tractor, for example, going to be ready, autonomous ready, if it turned on today or in that 3 years?
What are the main concerns either of you have as technology moves that way towards autonomy and things like that? What could prevent you from embracing it, I guess?
Cost. And then not autonomy. I got a real fear of, when we talk about the See and Spray technology, of not saving the farmer any money. It's something the farmer just has to adopt to control his weeds. And so I see all that benefit of that technology winding up in shareholders' hands in Wall Street, instead of benefiting the farmer or the local community. This is where I did touch on that on the panel. I wanted to was, what is we as farmers and everyone that was in the audience of short line equipment manufacturers, what can we develop mechanically to control weeds with cultural practices that doesn't require See and Spray technology, whether it be a rolling down a cover crop with a roller crimper that doesn't require herbicides. What can we do to make ourselves more profitable, to solve our problems, that we don't have to pay big ag to figure out for us?
I think cost is always on top of mind for any grower, right? That's first. But if you take that off, I really think connectivity is going to be a challenge, and it continues. I know we're spending quite a bit of money here in the U.S. to bring rural broadband to all these communities, but it isn't 100% coverage. And so I would say that it just can't be connectivity, but it's going to have the bandwidth, right? It's got to be 4G, LTE, or a 5G scenario to run some of this technology. I mean, you take Nick, I mean, it's not one machine, it's going to be three machines out there. And so is the bandwidth there, that if I did and feel like I want to invest in and adopt it, is the bandwidth there? I think that's a hurdle that we are very much challenged with, to give the opportunities to growers to choose what is. I will tell you, in the last 2 years, Ohio farmers are behind the eight ball. There is technology out there that in some cases could provide value to the farm and they can't adopt because of the
structure.
Well, yeah, we are really good about talking about download speeds because we want to watch things like Netflix and Prime and things like that. So that's all download speeds. But in order to make a lot of this autonomy work, you got to have the upload speed. So we talk about symmetry, meaning that I might need 50 down, 50 up, in order for that technology to work, or 100 by 100 or 100 by 50 download upload type scenarios. And so those are real, and so we got to make sure that, I think, for the American farmers across this nation to be competitive in the future, we've got to ensure that that's there for them to be able to adopt the technology. Europe's doing it in their head. And for my farmers not to be able to adopt some of these technology, that's a concern on my part. I'm not advocating for it, but if Nick wants to try it or wants to and he can't, I feel like that's so putting him behind the eight ball.
You're saying really it's got to be cell phone coverage.
Fiber's going to be a key element, but fiber's not going to be trenched all over.
Right.
But it's going to be this.
Or you can put a router at the end of your field hooked up to your fiber, but that's not efficient. It's got to be a tower that you're hooking up to somewhere.
So, but you get into the combination of fiber and private, like 4G, 5G networks to get your coverage that you need.
Anything, questions you have on, and maybe questions for John on what to be preparing for related to the technology and data usage and stuff like that?
Questions or challenges? It's a good, see if John can answer that one.
I don't know if I've got an answer, but I will say we've come a long ways. You know, we talked about some of the challenges today, but I also look back in 10 years ago and then even 20 years ago about some of the just connectivity challenges and being able to do what we were trying to do back then. And we've overcome a lot to get to the point we are today. So my point in that is, going back to Nick, he can today buy a whatever color tractor and connect it to a planter or some of these implements of a different color, and things are working today. That didn't happen 10, 20 years ago. And so we've made, in particular with the ISO and the CAN bus push, that we've made a lot. But I still think we continue to be able to connect and put the information in front of farmers that they need in order to improve the efficiencies in terms of making this. And we're talking about the USDA doesn't come out. Nick, you brought up a great point up. But today, I know, I've seen it, you know, we know what planting progress is in real time. There's technology in Ohio that I know what the planting progress is for a county. Now, that isn't published. But my point is, does that help in all this? If I can get information in Nick's hands about markets, about his cost, about what's happening in the operation as you connect all these things up, that's going to be more value for him to think through, hey, I've got it planned out. I might have a 3-year plan here, but in real time, I can begin to understand, am I maintaining my plan? Am I verifying what I've done? But I can also be more fluid in making adjustments to maybe save some dollars or make dollars in certain ways as we come along. We're not to that, in my opinion, but we can be. But connectivity's, again, I'll highlight that. Connectivity is going to be a real key to enable all that.
Yeah.
You bet. I'd say a question challenge that I have. We've seen the onset of traits in the last 5 years, and we've had Xtend, Enlist, and then we've had the lists come along with Liberty, and Xtend Flex is obviously glufosinate's an option. Talk of all three of them being dicamba, 2,4-D, glufosinate, all going to be in the same soybean. I got weeds resistant to all of them. It's going to take new chemistry. I'm afraid it's going to cost $100 an acre. That's my biggest concern and question. And then it goes back to what I was saying. I've said it enough 2 or 3 times this morning. When that happens, it's going to go to shareholders on Wall Street, and it's going to take money out of our rural community. And so But at the same time, it's technology that's needed to feed the world. So, and I think there's room for technology to be put into cover crops, genetics, to help them perform better. We're working with old cultivars that haven't been worked with, bred or too much for what we're using them for. We're just taking BNS cover crops and selling them and placing them all over the country. And think of things that my goal on my farm, or my goal for agriculture, is to culturally control weeds, culturally and biologically control weeds, and not with chemicals. I think that's what our soils be the best thing for our soil and for our farmers' pocketbooks. And some advancements in cover crops could help with that, whether it be through different traits or finding different cultivars. I think there are some places that are working on that. One of the places I've toured in the last few months is the Donald Danforth Center in St. Louis that are working on finding different DNA and working with, but we think of the Big Ag is not working on that. The Cortevas, the Syngenta's, the Bayers, I think they're still hunting for 300 bushel corn or 400 bushel corn, or trying to advance the, and putting traits in it. But that's where they make their money, is traits. But that might be coming to the end if the traits aren't effective, if you can't, for what the weeds, for what they're resistant to, for what those, if those herbicides don't kill the weeds for those traits were used for, then they're no longer of value. And that's the biggest question and challenge that one of the biggest questions and challenges I see for our future and for profitability, for sure.
What about resilience of plants? Because I got to believe you're like us. Springs are just a flip of the coin. I mean, we've lost 10 working days in April on average, 10 working days in October, so we're crunched even more. But I guess my question is going to your comments about this year, but what about just having plants that can be resilient to all these different weather patterns that couldn't, whether it's later planted, gets dry for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it might be June, it could be July next year, it could be August like it normally is. I mean, what about plants being able to be a little more resilient to that?
You bet. Weather's always been, I don't want to say it's climate change, because I don't know that climate's changing. It's always been a challenge. I think we're more aware of it than we used to be. We planted a lot of corn in June. We grow some specialty corn that is kind of low in seedling vigor. And so planting in April and getting a bunch of rain on it and sitting in the mud, it don't work out very well. It gets a lot of seedling diseases and it can damp off. And so one of the ways we've combated that is wait for a good planting forecast where it looks like it's gonna be warm and drier and it can come out of the ground pretty fast. Well, it's led to us planting quite a bit of corn in June. Well, it's been successful for us. It's taken some extra management. It's non-GMO, so bugs populations are higher, especially earworms and fall armyworm pressure when the corn is pollinating and it gets in the ear. But we've had to spray more for that. But we've had great success growing corn later. Because on our farm in East Central Kansas, we get 38 inches of rain, and a lot of that comes in May and June. If we look at some data and start compiling it, we lose more yield sometimes from too wet than too dry. So we've actually, it's wet, we know we're going to lose a bunch of yield, let's wait for that to pass and plant later. And it's actually been successful for us just to some degree. Almost kind of realized that maybe we're losing more yield from too wet than too dry at times. So, but yeah, it takes some resilient plants to do that. One of the other challenges we've had with too is I had planted a hairy vetch cover crop last year and half the field winter killed. Don't know what variety it was variety not stated. Well, it was a variety I had no good, or is it just, those are the kinds of things we got to kind of maybe start applying some of these, this technology we've applied to our corn and soybeans to some of these cover crops if we're going to make them more successful and they're going to get adopted widespread.
If you backed up time 20 years, what would your dad have said you were going to plant corn in June? What would he have said 20 years ago?
Better plant Milo.
Exactly. My point in that is we have made progress because, a few years ago in Ohio, we planted to your point, we got and through genetic and resilience, you know, we could grow 200 bushel corn even playing in June. I'm not saying we can do that every year, but your dad would flipped out if you had mentioned that to him 20 years.
He wouldn't let me, and he still flips out a little bit and scratches his head, and then he gets to the combine and it's yielding, and he's scratching his head some more. Landlord asked about it that didn't like it. We planted some corn in June, and he says, I don't like it either, but all I can say is it's working.
But the beauty of that, though, is, right, Nick, is depending on how what's all this technology is, to learn and improve, to enhance, and now you got kind of more tools at your disposal to figure out what works best in your operation.
You bet. Yeah, definitely we have more information.
Yeah.
Like I think I said that earlier in the panel, we have all of our data recorded in the cloud of when things were done. Like we can go back now and pull up the year. Well, back in 2019, we planted this field on this day and it made this. We kind of had that before, but you got to go find a Excel spreadsheet probably in a file cabinet. And was that we don't know that day was, there's nothing backing up. That was just what somebody wrote down on a piece of paper that got put into the computer. Was that actual? But when it's when it's been recorded by a computer in the cloud, it's pretty hard to argue with that, right?
I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, the Andersons. Introducing Andersons Ultramate lineup, the farmer's solution for boosting nutrient efficiency, environmental care, and crop profitability. This humate liquid enhances plant uptake of N, P, and micronutrients, minimizing leaching and enhancing soil structure. It seamlessly integrates into liquid fertilizer, micronutrient, or pesticide blends across various pH levels, offering unmatched convenience. Say hello to Ultramate from the Andersons and goodbye to compromise. Next up, no-tillers Joe Hamilton of Muncie, Indiana, and Tim Norris of No-Till Capital of the World, Knox County, Ohio, share their perspectives on technology and autonomy in agriculture. This conversation is from the 2024 Precision Farming Dealers Summit.
Joe, if you just kind of want to tell us about more about your background and your farm.
Sure. I farm about 2,500 acres, mostly corn and soybeans. I'm 100% no-till and have been for 5 years. And I'm also 100% cover crops now. I farm some non-GMO soybeans, some other specialty soybeans, non-GMO corn. Yeah.
How about you, Tim? What can you tell us about Norris Grain Farms?
Well, basically, the goal for my farm has changed a lot, because for the first several years that I farmed, I was always farming to play with the equipment that I was selling and trying to learn about the tools and the services that we offered at Ag Infotech, and one, trying to prove those and using that data to help convince other growers to adopt. Now that I sold the company, the farm is my main focus, and now I'm trying to make sure the farm is profitable. So I farm basically with myself, and then the first employee that I had hired at Ag Infotech, he came when I left, he came to the farm as well. He wanted to farm with me, and we farm about 950 acres of our own corn, soybeans, wheat, and sunflowers, and then we do about 750 acres of custom planting and harvesting and actually spraying now for neighbors.
I'll start peppering you guys with a couple of questions here to start. Joe, just tell us about some of the cutting edge technology you're using right now that it's kind of giving you that winning edge on your farm.
I think that the most important technology for me is variable rate applications of broadcast amendments. Because I'm no-till and I'm very interested in soil health, it takes several years for the applications to really make a change. And I need to get the right product in the right place at the right time. Any over or under applications can really slow me down for several years.
How about you, Tim? Tell us about some of the technology you're using.
I think the thing that's helped the most is the hydraulic downforce. One of the things, especially in no-till, you've got to wait on no-till for the conditions to be right. And sometimes it's like 80% of the field's right there, and then there's that other 20% that's not. And if you didn't have hydraulic downforce, if you went on days like that, I think it could be, you know, it could be devastation to the crop. You're not going to get a good seed stand. And I think the hydraulic downforce has really helped us with that.
And when you're looking ahead to, you know, this coming year, maybe even next year, Joe, are there any kind of upgrades or certain technologies you're interested in maybe adding to your arsenal?
I think my biggest upgrade in the next year will be a new self-propelled sprayer. My current sprayer is 11 years old. I'm looking forward to a new display, boom height control. With non-GMO soybeans and planting grain into cover crops, I usually make 5 passes a year with the sprayer. And so I spend a lot of time in the sprayer. I'm really looking forward to some new technology there.
How about you, Tim?
Well, we're going to add the Right Spot from Ag Leader onto our sprayer this year. I've got an older 2006 Rogator, and I'm putting more money into the electronics than what I paid for the sprayer. So that's a little nerve-wracking, but hopefully the sprayer is in good mechanical condition and will last. But of that 1,700 acres that we're spraying on, our average field size is about 15 acres, and our larger fields are cut in half by waterways, making that even smaller. So I can't wait to see the savings that I'm going to have by not having to outline the waterways with the sprayer, let alone it's going to help me do a lot better job by keeping a constant pressure, a constant droplet size, and really helping us get the most effectiveness out of those products that we're applying and not having them drift away or applying them in the wrong way, too large of a droplet size.
And Tim, when you think about some of the pain points of, you know, when you're adopting new precision technology, or some of the barriers that might keep some other farmers that you know from adopting it, what comes to mind just talking about some of the potential pain points that you've experienced?
Well, as a farmer, I've always been trained to cost. Cost comes to mind, but if you can look at the ROI on it, a lot of these technologies have a really fast ROI. One of the biggest pain points that I've had, though, is adopting technology maybe too early. And then when you go to upgrade, when there's something new that comes out, that technology is not upgradable or not compatible with the next upgrade. So I really like to look at companies that have an integrated upgrade path where you can always add to the system.
How about you, Joe? Have you had any challenges when you're implementing new technology? Or
My biggest challenge is training operators and troubleshooting. I have several guys that are older, have never used a smartphone. I will put them in a piece of equipment. I'll be 20 minutes away and they'll call me having problems. And it's very difficult for me to troubleshoot and solve their problems.
Are you guys running connected equipment on your operation?
I do use JD Link with John Deere Operations Center. I don't know that the service technician uses it very often. It's good for me to sit at my computer and be able to tell how close to service I am on some of my equipment. But the biggest thing is looking at the yield monitor at the end of the day on having telematics and connected equipment.
So I do not use any telematic services other than Ag Leader's Agfinity, and it's really not, I'm not considering it telematics because it only syncs when I come back to the farm and hit connect to the Wi-Fi. But it is nice to have that data flowing in from the machines every time they come back to the shop. We have several areas that don't have connection to the internet, so I have not really went with the connected piece yet.
Tim, what's your take on autonomy? Does it currently have a place on your farm, or do you see it having a place on your farm in the next 5 to 10 years?
I've wanted autonomy since I first saw auto steer. I was trying to figure out, you know, we had put a light bar on a horse-drawn sprayer so that Amish could tell where he was spraying through the field. And he was joking with me, can we put the easy steer on so it'll pull the ropes and the reins too? But I've always thought autonomy would be something that would be coming sooner than it has. For those of you that don't know, I spent 2 years with Smart Ag and then a year with Smart Ag and a year with Raven on the auto cart. And that really excited me. That technology I could see working on my farm and helping me out a ton. Unfortunately, I don't have it yet. I don't have a tractor new enough and don't really know if it's totally released yet or not. But last year we had a Fendt on the farm. And we had a group from Brazil coming up, and Ag Infotech brought this Sabanto Fendt out, and we got to mow 40 acres of pasture with it, and it was really neat to see. So I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford it if you have to have a brand new tractor and the technology on top of that, but if it will retrofit to tractors that are 10, 15 years old, I could see it having a fit.
Joe, is autonomy, does it seem like a science fiction movie to you, or is it pretty close to having a place on your farm?
No, I think it's close. If Tesla can create a self-driving car that can drive down the highway with all the unknowns and variables present on the highway, why can't we make a tractor that drives itself in the field? I would use it as a time savings. If I can spray 90 acres an hour sitting in the sprayer, I don't want to be able to spray 90 acres an hour standing by the side of the field babysitting the autonomous sprayer. It has to be a time savings for me. But with weather events every year, shortening my planting window, a lot of times I'm riding the planter one day and spraying the next. And if I have 10 good days to plant and I just burn up one of those because I had to get out of the planter and get in the sprayer, it's very inefficient for me in my operation. I think autonomy will take a place on his farm, but just like Tim said, it's going to be cost. I don't cover 25,000 acres, I cover 2,500. So it has to be a cost-effective solution for me.
Joe, It sounds like you're thinking like I am on autonomy, but are you thinking it would be something awesome for planting cover crops or spraying that, doing your fall spraying while you're in the field with the combine? Because that's how I view it working.
Or spring spraying. When I'm in the planter, if it can be spraying in the field next to me that I just planted, that's where I see autonomy working for me. I do use a no-till drill, and I cover a lot of acres drilling cover crops. It's kind of a mindless job. You cover 10 acres an hour and drive 5 miles an hour through the field. If I could automate that, that would be great.
And all this technology is coming so fast. I mean, I went to the FIRA conference a couple of years ago, and my head like wanted to explode. I mean, how much do you rely on dealerships, these guys here, to keep you up to speed on that? And Tim, do you think they could do maybe a better job of educating people, or what's the challenge there? You have a unique background in that.
I rely on the dealership and the dealership meetings, and then coming to meetings like this and the National No-Till Conference. And I also moderate a peer group of, let's see, there's 9 precision ag dealers. So I get a lot of information from them and get to see what's going on different segments. And so that's how I stay educated.
As much as dealers and conferences help me, Facebook groups have been great for troubleshooting problems. Chances are, if I'm having a problem, someone else has seen it, and farmers tend to be pretty open to sharing their lessons learned. No matter if it's a dealer or a Facebook group, wherever I can get help, I'm glad to receive it.
I know there was an article, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, I think, about OEM shifting more to the retrofit mindset. So, Tim, I wanted to ask you, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I definitely think that'll help increase adoption, although that's what we built our business on. It's what Precision Planting, Ag Leader, Trimble, Raven have all kind of built their business around retrofitting equipment. And it's neat to start to see that the mainline dealerships or mainline equipments are actually buying some of these companies, with Case purchasing Raven and Trimble getting the majority share, Case getting the majority share of Trimble, or AGCO getting the majority share of Trimble and then owning Precision Planting. I think that's just going to help that adoption of retrofitting existing equipment. So
those tractors that I own, they get less than 150 hours a year. A lot of times they're 10, 20, 30, 40, over 40 years old, and I've put auto steer systems and displays in them. It's important for me to be able to retrofit anything that I have. I don't want to go out and buy a $500,000 tractor to plant cover crops with, but I do want auto steer, so I'm not overlapping in every round. I think when we talk about autonomy, and John Deere has done a great job of making very expensive tractors that are comfortable for an operator to ride in. When we shift to an autonomous mindset, a lot of the cheaper equipment that's not as operator friendly will be a great platform for an autonomous system if it can be retrofitted.
Do you have any questions for each other? I mean, I know you just met each other, so were there any immediate precision related topics that you discussed right away, or that you both really were at the top of your list to talk with each other about?
For me, it was interesting to hear Tim's perspective on the subscription model. I see manufacturers wanting to sell you a receiver display and all the hardware you need to install it in your tractor. And maybe I'm getting older, but it's tough for me to swallow the $2,000 or $5,000 a year cost for that system versus buying it once for $10,000 or $15,000 and owning it forever.
One of the things I'm curious about is 2,500 acres of no-till, and you're able to put cover crop on all 2,500 acres. How do you accomplish that? Because with two people, we just can't do that.
A lot of it is aerial applied. I'm in the USDA NRCS EQIP program. With that, it comes with restrictions. I have to apply cover crop in standing crop. And I will hire an airplane to come in for 2 days and fly on cover crop. The other part of it is I hire retired guys. I hire guys that are 70 years old and used to drive a semi and want something to do. I'm a marriage counselor as much as a farmer. And they like spending time in tractors, and I like having them. So for the cover crops that we drill after harvest, they've been a great solution for me.
That's good, because my brother just quit farming and I took over his farm, and I told him, if you want something to do, you can plant my cover crops. So that's what we're going to try for this fall. So
good stuff there. Are either of you planning to take advantage of possible carbon credits, and where does Precision Ag play into that?
It's already playing into it. I upload my cover crop planting, and I'm getting paid per acre for my soil health practices. I don't know that I agree with everything that's going on with carbon credits. Some of it's difficult for me to take advantage of because I've been doing it for too long. They want to see adoption and additive practices. But keeping track of it all with my precision equipment has been beneficial for me.
Yeah, I see the data management aspect from the precision equipment, being able to track everything you've done, helping a ton. I am not taking advantage of the carbon credits. I don't think it's enough of an income for the risk that I feel that you might be taking with it. I just think there could be some legal ramifications if the practices that you implement don't actually sequester the amount of carbon that they think that you're going to sequester. I'm just afraid that they could come back on you when you look at some of those legal agreements. I have not really made that step yet for the price that I would get per acre.
Do you guys use drones? I know you said aerial apply cover crops.
A little bit. Previously, it's been a manned airplane that's flown them on. This year, I did do 80 acres through a Indiana State Department of Agriculture program, and it was flown on with a drone. They brought two UAVs out and alternated back and forth. It worked really well for me. I live close to houses. I farm close to houses. I farm close to highways. Sometimes it's tough to get the guy with the airplane to apply on those fields. And if it can be cost and timing effective for me to use a autonomous or a remote control UAV to do those fields, it would be huge for me.
Yeah, I've used drones for several years. When I was at Agintotech, I used them quite a bit, and we struggled a lot with getting the images stitched together because it was in the beginning phases. We struggled with finding enough room to actually land the drone. We were using the Ag Eagle systems, and they required like 1,000 feet of flat area to land. And that was just kind of hard for us to find in our areas. So the helicopters have been a great asset, and I use those for field scouting now, but I have not used anything for aerial application. However, one of the guys from the local co-op that used to spray my fields before I got a Rogator started a company of spraying with drones. So I'm hoping he gets a dry system this year, and we can actually do some cover crop seeding too with that, to try to see how it works for us.
Yeah, you see so many drones on the market, and everyone's billing theirs as the fastest and largest, or you go to the Farm Progress Show or the Ag Equipment Expo, and you see all these different kinds of products and technologies. I'm just curious, you know, how do you sift through what's worth investing in or not? Does it just come down to ROI when you're looking at new products and you have all these different brands, or maybe your dealership's showing you all these different kind of products? All come down to ROI or what?
I think ROI and manpower, labor that it takes to run it as well. I have seen the systems where you have 10 drones, and while one is landing, you're changing out batteries and refilling, and they just keep working their way through. But like I said earlier, if I'm spraying 90 acres an hour now, and I buy an autonomous sprayer, and I'm still only covering 90 acres an hour, and I'm standing at the edge of the field, I don't know that it's a great benefit for my operation.
I think it should come down to ROI for me, and I love ROI, and I talk about it a lot. But the honest fact is, I still have my first computer I ever bought, which is a Commodore VIC-20 that had 4K of RAM, and it's sitting in a display case in my office, and I was one of the first people to have auto steer when it didn't pay. So if autonomy came out and it didn't have an ROI, I'd probably buy one just because I want to be the first in the area to really utilize it. And so I guess it should come to ROI, but a lot of times I make those decisions just because I like the technology.
Thanks to Nick Getterman, John Fulton, Joe Hamilton, and Tim Norris for today's conversation. A transcript for this episode is available at no-tillfarmer.com/podcasts. Many thanks to the Ultramate lineup by the Andersons for helping to make this No-Till podcast series possible. From all of us here at No-Till Farmer, I'm Michaela Bachner. Thanks for listening.